My name is Eric from Catskill, and you're listening to WGXC Acre 90.7 FM.
Tune in all sorts of creative community voices on the radio at 90.7 FM on Monday, October 17th. It's part of our WGXC Fall Pledge Drive, our Tower Power Pledge Drive, where we're deciding whether to renew our lease on our FM tower and continue broadcasting on 90.7 FM or not. We need some sustaining supporters to make contributions to continue broadcasting on FM. We want to make sure that local teenagers are heard all the way to Pittsfield and local senior citizens are heard all the way to Prattsville and out into Schoharie and Delaware counties and into western Connecticut and northern Ulster and Dutchess counties. And we want you to make that contribution today. We need your help in particular. That's right. You should go to wgxc.org/donate. Make a difference in your community. Raise all boats, as community radio is something that helps everybody in the community. Nonprofits get interviewed and featured. Local businesses are mentioned and profiled. And the news is presented in a way that you can help make voting decisions each election season. And more is all at 90.7 FM. You've got music from around the corner and around the world on the radio, your friends and neighbors at 90.7 FM. Please make a difference today at wgxc.org/donate. That's wgxc.org/donate. On the weekends, you can also visit the Boom and Bloom record store in East Durham, and throughout the week, you can make a donation at Spike's Record Rack on Main Street in Catskill or at John Doe Books and Records in Hudson. Or you can go online to wgxc.org/donate. Make a difference in your community and make sure FM continues to have one space on the dial, 90.7 FM, is open to the public. On Saturday, October 22nd, come out to Wave Farm and view the installations. It's part of WGXC's Fall Pledge Drive. Noon to 6 p.m. on Saturday, October 22nd, Wave Farm will welcome drop-in visitors for tours of the campus, including WGXC Acre Studio and the many installations on the property that employ radio in some way. Also, community members and local nonprofit organizations can come by to record public service announcements to air on 90.7 FM, and members of the public can record a station ID for WGXC. Again, that's Wave Farm is open for visits on Saturday, October 22nd during the WGXC Fall Pledge Drive from noon to 6 p.m. Go to wgxc.org for more information, and we'll see you on Saturday, October 22nd at Wave Farm.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Marcus DeGrazia Acupuncture of Austerlitz, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC. Hands-on, listener-supported radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC News Update. Go to the WGXC Newsroom, wgxc.org, for more information about any of these stories. Andrea Macko reports for Porcupine Soup that a trial date has not yet been set for the woman charged in the November 2021 stabbing death of Catskill resident Scott O. Myers. Greene County District Attorney Joseph Stanzione said last week his office is still working through the discovery phase of the case. Discovery is the formal pretrial process of exchanging information about witnesses and evidence that happens between the parties in a criminal matter. Carrie Weiser, 33, of Catskill, has been charged with Myers' death. She is currently remanded without bail pending trial. Weiser is represented by Hudson attorney Michael Howard. Police allege that Weiser killed Myers, 68, by stabbing him with a knife on the left side of his neck, severing his carotid artery. Police were called to Myers' apartment at 39 West Bridge Street in the Village at approximately 12:15 a.m. on November 17, 2021. When they arrived, police found Myers with a lethal stab wound. He eventually succumbed to his injuries at the scene. Weiser was arrested by state police less than 2 hours later. Little is known about the circumstances surrounding the fatal assault. Myers and Weiser had gone to a dinner at a local brewery earlier in the evening and ended up at Myers' apartment, but what happened after that has not been publicly disclosed. The grand jury indicted Weiser on charges of second-degree murder and fourth-degree criminal possession of a weapon. She pleaded not guilty to the charges. Myers was well-known as a political activist locally. Read more about this story at porcupinesoup.com. Melanie Lekasevic reports for Capital Region Independent Media that a recent wave of vandalism at Vanderbilt Town Park in Greenville left park benches suspended 10 feet above the ground and picnic tables standing on end against the playground slides. Quote, "We had additional vandalism in the park over the last couple of days," unquote, Town Supervisor Paul Macko said on October 13th. Quote, "Someone took all the picnic tables and stacked them up on top of the swing set. I don't know how they did it," unquote. The vandalism was discovered by town board member Richard Bearer last week when he went to the park to check on an unrelated project. State police are investigating, Bearer said. The park furniture is made of solid wood and is quite heavy. Quote, "We were very surprised. We were shocked," unquote, Bearer said. "We couldn't believe they could get them that high in the air. They are very heavy. One of the benches was broken on the bottom, and one of the tables had a board that was broken. But it's all been repaired and put back in the park," unquote, he said. Several park signs were also vandalized, Macko said, and, quote, "and a bunch of kids had a report card burning party on the nature trail. A woman tried to put out the fire and had to call the fire department," unquote. Macko said the troopers are talking to a few kids because some of the report cards failed to burn fully, so names were left visible. Read more about this story at theupstater.com. Lena Bellamy reports for the Times Union that the MacArthur Foundation has named Sky Hopinka an assistant professor at Bard College, a 2022 MacArthur Fellow. He will receive an $800,000 no-strings-attached stipend known as a Genius Grant. The award is given to, quote, "extraordinarily talented and creative," unquote, people as an investment in their potential, according to an October 11th news release from Bard. Hopinka is a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation of Wisconsin and a descendant of the Pechanga Band of Luisenoe Indians. His work has been shown at numerous film festivals, including Sundance, the Toronto International Film Festival, and the Chicago Underground Film Festival. He was also an inaugural fellow at the Forge Project, the Indigenous-focused arts organization in Taconic, which recently announced a partnership with Bard to support Indigenous studies. The MacArthur Foundation, in a statement, praised Hopinka's ability to layer imagery, sound, and text to, quote, "create an innovative cinematic language," unquote. Prospective fellows are nominated anonymously by leaders in their respective fields, and an anonymous selection committee considers the submissions. Fellowship recipients learn they have been chosen via a phone call from the MacArthur Foundation before the public announcement. Artist Paul Chan, a 2003 Bard alumnus, was also named a MacArthur Fellow this year. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
New York is one of the states that opted to expand Medicaid as soon as it could through the Affordable Care Act, and recent studies find that 2014 decision has paid off in terms of better health outcomes. One positive and unintended consequence of Medicaid expansion was found by researchers at the Moore Center for the Prevention of Child Sexual Abuse. Fewer cases of child neglect in states that have expanded Medicaid compared to those that have not. Moore Center Director Elizabeth Letourneau says, on average, the difference is 13-16% fewer neglect cases in expansion states, where parents can more easily afford health coverage.
And financial instability is perhaps the most serious risk factor for neglect of children. And so there's less medical debt, there's less, you know, trying to figure out do I buy this prescription medicine or do I put food on the table for my family?
The researchers also found slight but positive trends in reducing physical abuse. The federal government provides funding to help states expand Medicaid programs. A dozen states have yet to agree to expansion, but several will have voters make the decision on their ballots in November. A Columbia University study has also linked Medicaid coverage to a decrease in serious health outcomes in pregnancies. While there are numerous programs to help families on an individual basis, Letourneau says comprehensive policies like Medicaid shouldn't be overlooked as a solution.
If those policies happen to have the impact of driving down and preventing violence against children, you're just going to get a much, much bigger bang for your buck.
The federal government covers 90% of Medicaid expansion costs, and extra incentives were added during the pandemic. Paying for the remaining share out of a state's budget has been a source of dissent, mostly among Republican policymakers. I'm Edwin J. Vieira, New York News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
This is the WGXC Congressional Report, tracking the votes, statements, positions, and campaigns of the representatives and candidates for the 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st congressional seats in New York. Current Democratic Representative Paul Tonko from the 20th District votes with the positions of President Joe Biden 100% of the time, according to the 538.com website. Republican Elise Stefanik, currently representing the 21st District, votes with Biden's positions 19.3% of the time. Democrat Pat Ryan just began representing the 19th district and has yet to be included in the rankings.
Nick Reisman is reporting for State of Politics. Democratic congressional candidate Josh Riley holds a 5-point advantage over Republican Mark Molinaro in the 19th congressional district race, according to a Spectrum News Siena College poll released October 6. Poll found Riley with 46% of the vote compared to Molinaro's 41%. Within a 5 percentage point margin of error of a survey of 470 likely district voters from September 25th to September 28th. The congressional seat includes parts of the Hudson Valley, Southern Tier, and Central New York, and is among a handful of House districts in New York that could determine control of the chamber in the November midterm elections. The poll showed Riley with more support from independent voters than Molinaro, 46% to 40%. A majority of voters have no opinion of or do not know enough about Riley, a first-time candidate. According to the poll, a majority of voters in the district hold an unfavorable view of President Joe Biden, and Governor Kathy Hochul, a Democrat, is in a close race against Republican candidate Lee Zeldin. The majority of voters in the district do not like the direction the country is heading. The cost of living and inflation concerns were cited by 52% of survey respondents as the top issue in the race, followed by threats to democracy at 31% and abortion at 28%. Riley campaign manager Cobby Ice said, and I quote, "We're encouraged by today's poll results, but taking nothing for granted. Voters are ready for a change from professional politicians like Mark Molinaro, and Josh is running to bring new leadership that puts people over profits," end quote. Molinaro's campaign manager, Will Dawson, however, declined to say much other than the campaign was focused on Election Day, not polls. Read the full story at nystateofpolitics.com. Mid-Hudson News reports that Democratic congressional candidate Josh Riley claims his campaign raised more than $1.6 million in the third quarter and has more than $1 million cash on hand for the final weeks of the election. Voting begins October 29th and ends November 8th this year. With new congressional districts because of redistricting, Riley is running in the new 19th congressional district against Republican Mark Molinaro, who has yet to announce his recent fundraising totals. Riley said, and I quote, "We are proving that people-powered campaign can beat one bankrolled by corporate PACs and special interest," end quote. A recent Siena poll conducted between September 25th and 28th showed Riley with a 5-point lead over Molinaro, but within the poll's margin of error. WSKG reporter Vaughn Golden wrote on Twitter about the poll, and I quote, "The margin of error here is so immensely large that it's plainly silly to use this or any similar poll to suggest someone leads or trails 5+ weeks before an election, especially if you factor in the number of undecided voters, too. End quote. The poll did give Riley a 52-44% lead outside the poll's margin of error in Greene, Columbia, and Ulster counties. Molinaro is from Dutchess County, which is not in the new 19th congressional district. Riley lives in Broome County in central New York, which was added to the district in redistricting. Read more about this story at Mid-Hudson News. Tyler A. McNeil reports in the Daily Gazette that Representative Paul Tonko has declined to participate in another debate this election cycle. Tonko will not agree to a debate hosted by the Daily Gazette October 19th in Schenectady. Liz Joy, Tonko's Republican opponent, has said she would participate in this event and at least two other debates. But Tonko has only agreed to one with public television station WMHT on October 27. Tonko campaign spokesperson Sean Madges said, and I quote, "Councilman Tonko looks forward to the debate he has already accepted on October 27th to further demonstrate to voters his record on growing the Capital Region economy, fighting for reproductive rights, and repairing democracy after his opponent organized a bus trip to the January 6th insurrection," end quote. Joy, meanwhile, criticized Tonko for ducking so many debates. Joy said, and I quote, "It's disgraceful that a career politician since 1976, Paul Tonko, refuses to accommodate the request of the Daily Gazette," end quote. In 2020, when also running against Joy, Tonko would only agree to one debate. The 20th congressional district election begins October 29th and now includes Rensselaer County. Read the full story in the Daily Gazette.
This has been the WGXC Congressional Report, tracking the votes, statements, positions, and campaigns of the representatives and candidates for the 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st congressional seats in New York. Go to WGXC.org for more information.
A proposed high-speed rail line could change the way people travel across Long Island and through the New England states. The line, conceived by the North Atlantic Rail Alliance, would provide easier access to such cities as Boston, Hartford, New Haven, and Providence from New York. The idea grew from a discussion on how to cut travel times between New York and New England, says Robert Yarrow with the North Atlantic Rail Alliance. He says it is possible, but finds the biggest challenge so far is a lack of faith in projects of this size.
Well, there's this kind of general skepticism in this country that we can't do big things anymore. The people just don't think we have the ability to pull off multi-state, multi-billion dollar investment projects of this kind.
Recent years have seen growing efforts to integrate high-speed rail into the U.S. system. Currently, the only contender in the U.S. is Amtrak's Acela line, and that averages 82 miles an hour, despite a capability of 150 miles an hour. But with a cost estimate of more than $23 billion, the new route would need financial backing as well as public support. The North Atlantic Rail route crosses several East Coast states, while most high-speed rail efforts have been state-specific. One example is California's high-speed rail service, which has languished since critics have said it isn't as necessary as its backers have made it out to be. Yarrow finds misconceptions about high-speed rail have prevented it from catching on in the U.S. He thinks what's missing is a lack of political will.
We kind of accept the fact that we're stuck in traffic and that we've got slow growth and there's nothing we can do about it. This is part of the answer that, yeah, indeed, we can do something about it. The rest of the world is moving ahead with these projects and we're not, and it's putting us at an increasing competitive disadvantage with the rest of the world.
He adds crossing Long Island Sound is one of the more challenging parts of the route. Previous proposals have involved bridges, but this one includes building a tunnel strictly for electric train use. Though still in its infancy, Yarrow says the new route could come to fruition within the next two decades. I'm Edwin J. Vieira, New York News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Here is this week's environmental news from WGXC. Go to the WGXC newsroom, WGXC.org, for more about these stories and others. Liz Montgomery reports for Porcupine Soup that Coxsackie Village officials are pondering the use of their eminent domain power to acquire the old American Valve Manufacturing Company property at 170 Mansion Street. Cleanup of the 15-acre Superfund site ended nearly 20 years ago. And the village is again looking at the property, this time for use as a dog park and other municipal uses. According to county property records, American Valve is still the owner. Mayor Mark Evans said at a public hearing in September the vacant land has been remediated, but digging is restricted to no more than 3 feet, thereby limiting what can be done with the property. The village is looking to use 6 acres on the northern side of the parcel. A 3-year state Superfund remediation of the site was concluded in early 2004 after then-Attorney General Elliot Spitzer sued American Valve to finance the cleanup of the lead and toxic solvents left behind when the business was relocated to North Carolina. From 1920 until 1988, American Valve operated a valve manufacturing and assembly business at the location, leaving the parcel contaminated by lead and the toxic solvent perchlorethylene that tainted the soil and groundwater. According to Evans, should any future remediation be required at the site, the state of New York is responsible. Quote, the contamination will be there forever, but the issue is if it starts to percolate to the surface, the village is not held liable, unquote, Evans is quoted as saying. When a developer was interested in purchasing the property for housing a few years ago, Evans said residents along Mansion Street and Spencer Boulevard appealed to officials to obtain the property, quote, in order to move forward, the village has to have some type of stated purpose for obtaining the land, unquote, Evans said. Quote, thus far, the village is working under a dog park or some other type of municipal benefit. That's where the village is headed, unquote. A second public hearing on the matter is scheduled for October 11th. Read more about this story at porcupinesoup.com.
Fernando Alba reports for Syracuse.com that state officials said that the drought watch for most of upstate New York was lifted as of October 8th. According to the State Department of Environmental Conservation news release, Columbia, Greene, Albany, Rensselaer, and Schoharie counties are among the 34 counties that returned to normal designations. According to the DEC, recent rainfall and higher levels of ground and surface water led to the watch being lifted. Officials said the DEC continues to encourage New Yorkers to limit water waste by fixing leaks and choosing efficient water fixtures. Dutchess, Nassau, and Ulster counties are still under drought watch, the first of 4 drought advisories issued by the DEC. Water restrictions are not in place for the counties under watch, but residents are urged to conserve water by watering lawns only when necessary, raising lawnmowers to keep grass longer, and using a broom instead of a hose to clean sidewalks. In August, 49 counties from western New York to the Hudson Valley were under a drought watch. You can read the full story at Syracuse.com. Liz Montgomery reports for Porcupine Soup that the village of Athens was chosen along with 26 other municipalities to participate in a state program to upgrade wastewater infrastructure facilities. Governor Kathy Hochul said on October 7th, and I quote, the state's asset management program advances resources and expertise to help municipal leaders establish robust programs to maintain and upgrade essential wastewater infrastructure systems. By evaluating flood resilience needs, these local asset management programs will help our communities mitigate the effects of climate change and better prepare for the future, end quote. Funding for the program comes from New York's Clean Water Infrastructure Act. And you can read more about this story at the Porcupine Soup website.
New York's latest foliage report details leaves reaching peak color change locally. The report says, and I quote, in Greene County, foliage is peaking in Windham and should remain so through the weekend, with almost total change and very brilliant red, orange, yellow, and purple leaves. Peak foliage will arrive in the town of Catskill with very brilliant yellow and orange leaves, along with bright touches of red. In Ulster County, reports from Kingston predict foliage at midpoint of change, with more than 50% transition and bright green, yellow, and orange leaves. Columbia County spotters in Old Chatham are predicting near peak to peak leaves this weekend, with up to 80% change and very brilliant ginger, tangerine, canary yellow, paprika, chili, peach, and scarlet leaves. Foliage should be around midpoint of change in Hudson, where spotters expect 50% change and average to bright green, yellow, and orange leaves, along with flashes of red. Foliage will be near peak throughout Rensselaer County, with a good mix of bright fall colors. Look for 70 to 80% foliage change in the northern and eastern parts of the county, and 55 to 65% change in the southern and western portions. See New York's Foliage Report for more information.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Renewable Weather Forecast. We start each renewable weather forecast with the price of fossil fuels in Greene County. The Mobile in Caro at $3.55 a gallon has the lowest price for gas according to the Gas Buddy website. Then we look at the air quality forecast, which is creeping up. It's still in the good range, but it's higher at 35 on Sunday. The UV index is still moderate at 3 on Sunday. And the National Weather Service in Albany predicts a mostly sunny Sunday, good for local solar panels, with a high of 59. Sunday night, there's a 30% chance of rain, with increasing clouds throughout the night, low around 43. Monday, a 70% chance of rain is possible, mainly after 8 a.m., with cloudy skies, a high of 57, and a south wind, 5 to 8 miles per hour, spinning local windmills. 30% chance of rain is the prediction for Monday night, with a low around 39. And then Tuesday, the rain should end in the morning, and it should become mostly sunny, with a high of 50, a low around 33. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered radio for open ears.
Al-Bilali Sudan, a band from Timbuktu, Mali, is coming to perform at the Sanctuary for Independent Media on October 16th at 7 p.m. Their music is an improvisational tour de force of traditional instruments, rhythms, and scales. I have with me now the band, Al-Bilali Sudan, and producer Christopher Noland. Welcome!
Thank you.
Wonderful.
Yeah, we are very happy to be in the United States to show our music and our culture. So my father, Balawi Atara, he's the leader for the band.
Hi, hello.
Yeah.
Looking forward to meeting you in person. And?
And his uncle, Aboubakri Atara.
Hello. Bonjour.
Bonjour. Ça va?
And Ibrahim Aboubakri.
Bonjour.
Yes, he played a calabas. And me, Mohamed Ballo.
Wonderful.
So it's family band.
And you're coming to the sanctuary. We are very excited. How has the tour been in the U.S.? And how long have you been in the U.S.?
Okay.
I'm arrivé
So we've been in the United States like 11 days. We like, and we start to play. We already made concert, so we like, and it was good too.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
How is the experience of the concerts in New York City?
Was good, but looked like different in our place, but was very good. We like. And when the people like, the people enjoy and like our music, we are always happy.
How would you describe Timbuktu?
Good.
For somebody who has not been to Timbuktu, what should they know about it?
For someone he didn't been Timbuktu, but if he come, he will see. So Timbuktu was the middle of nowhere, the middle of marketing, the middle of the middle for like tourism. There is a lot of tourists people before coming in Timbuktu. So, but now it's changing because with what's happening in Mali. And 2012, you know, everything was changing.
2012, you're talking about the...